Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, peace talks between the government of Mali and Tuareg separatists are launched in Algiers.
They're going to be very difficult. They probably have more chance than some earlier, rather short-lived attempts to get negotiation going over the last 9 months, because there's a very strong alliance of African and international partners gathered round to put pressure on all sides to negotiate.
And a German national, the principal of a technical school, is kidnapped in Adamawa State in northern Nigeria. We ask who or what might be behind the abduction.
Certainly, it might not be unconnected with politics, though we all agree that Adamawa State is one of the states known to be volatile by Boko Haram attacks and so on.
Two of our stories coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Peace talks aimed at restoring stability to northern Mali have been launched in Algiers. Violence has re-erupted in Mali in recent months after French-led troops dispersed Islamist militants who had seized control of the north of the country in 2012. Meanwhile, France has announced the end of its military operation in Mali and the formation instead of a regional force to combat terrorism across northwest Africa. France and Mali have close historical ties, as we hear in this fact box presented by Loveday Wright and Maxwell Souk.
Mali became independent from France in 1960. How has this country been faring since then?
The country suffered from droughts, rebellions and a military dictatorship before democratic elections in 1992. After these crucial elections, Mali was seen as a model of African democracy and enjoyed economic growth. However, in January 2012, an armed conflict broke out in the north of the country, and this region has been unstable since then.
And how has this conflict developed?
The nomadic Tuareg tribes in the north have been the main protagonists of the conflict. At the end of the Libyan civil war, the Tuaregs took advantage of the chaos and smuggled weapons into Mali. They subsequently took over northern Mali and declared independence. The rebels then formed alliances with Islamist groups linked with Al-Qaeda in North Africa. But just a month later, these Islamist groups turned against the Tuaregs. With the support of Al-Qaeda, the Islamists took control of the cities of Timbuktu, Kidal and Gao. By autumn of 2012, the Islamist groups consolidated their hold on the north and were moving closer towards the centre of Mali. The West African regional grouping ECOWAS, backed by the UN and the African Union, agreed a military expedition to recapture the north. But in the time it took them to prepare, the Islamist fighters were continuing their insurgence towards the capital. In January 2013, the then acting president, Dion Kunda Traore, turned to France for help.
The French responded by launching an Operation Serval, which involved military attacks on Islamist camps in the north of Mali. What role has this played?
French military intervened to end the crisis in Mali in January 2013 to prevent radical Islamist groups and Tuareg rebels from overrunning the country. The French government originally detailed 4,000 troops in Mali to restore calm. They launched a series of airstrikes on Islamist bases in cities in the north of the country and rapidly succeeded in stopping the Islamists from advancing towards the capital Bamako, as well as taking back the cities that had been under Islamist control. By April 2013, France started to withdraw troops, later handing over responsibility for security in the north of Mali to the UN forces. At the end of its first military expedition in Mali, the French government announced that it had lost 9 soldiers killed in the line of duty.
But the situation in the region remains tense, with both Tuareg separatists and Islamists occasionally active. What is the current situation?
Mali's central government continues to be threatened by attacks in the north. Many countries have since contributed troops to battle the rebels, including the UN and ECOWAS member states. The 18-month-old renewed conflict has claimed dozens of lives and displaced thousands of people in Mali. It remains to be seen whether regional organisations and France will renew their commitment to bring stability to Mali.
Loveday Wright and Max Forsouk. France, it would appear, is realigning its presence in the region. Paul Melly is an associate fellow with the Africa programme at Chatham House in the UK. I asked him what the redeployment of French troops in a counter-terrorism force would mean in practice.
It means two things, really. In regional terms, it means that France has sent out a firm signal that it will ally itself, is an ally, of the governments across the region in fighting jihadist terrorism. So there will be a series of French bases established, major bases in Chad and in Mali, with support bases in Côte d'Ivoire and in Senegal, an intelligence and air base in Niger, and a series of advance posts actually deep into the Sahara Desert. But their focus will very much be on tackling jihadist terrorism. But the message, similarly for Mali, is that it really is the affair of the United Nations and the Malian government and the different groups within Mali to work out how that country should move forward in terms of its domestic politics.
So does this signal a lessening of the French commitment in Mali?
No, not really. It signals a change. Basically, what the French deployment in January 2013, Operation Serval, was designed to do was to end the jihadist control of northern Mali, the jihadist occupation of the north of the country. Now, there are many unanswered questions about exactly how far there was an overlap or alliance between elements of the jihadists and elements of the Tuareg nationalist armed groups. But the French intervention was very much motivated by the drive to tackle jihadism. Now, the jihadist control of the north was initially ended, obviously quite quickly, by Operation Serval. And then over the last year, the French have gradually changed the nature of their operations so that more and more they're just focusing on targeted action against jihadist terrorists, and they're staying out of the confrontation that has sporadically continued between the government and internal Tuareg rebels with a political or social agenda. That also reflects domestic French politics, because President François Hollande committed French troops, a number of whom have died. In fact, one more soldier was killed this week. But he's committed the troops in order to defend the stability of West Africa as a region, but fundamentally also to defend the security of France and Europe. That has been his political justification. He hasn't asked French voters to endorse the sacrifice that the French military are making in the name of stabilizing Mali. He's asked French voters to support the deployment of French troops ultimately for the security of France and of Europe.
The peace talks in Algiers, how difficult are they going to be?
They're going to be very difficult. They probably have more chance than some earlier, rather short-lived attempts to get negotiation going over the last 9 months, because there's a very strong alliance of African and international partners gathered round to put pressure on all sides to negotiate. But the underlying issues are very complex, because the Tuareg nationalist movements, while accepting that outright independence for the northern Mali region they call Azawad is for the moment off the agenda, they are looking for some quite strong form of autonomy. At the same time, the government doesn't want to give the north of Mali any special status, and that's partly because it sees Mali as a territorial whole, and the country already has a structure of regional government, and it wants to see regions treated equally. They may all be given enhanced regional rights, but it doesn't want to offer the north, the far northeast, some special treatment. But it also reflects a political reality. The armed groups only represent a segment, quite probably a minority segment, of the population in the region that that the armed groups see as Azawad. And there are very large parts of the north where support for remaining within the Malian United States as a normal part of the country remains very strong. In fact, in last December's parliamentary elections, election turnout in non-Tuareg towns across the north, or rather towns where the Tuareg are only a very small minority of the population, but in the north, was pretty high, among the highest in the country. People want to participate in Mali, largely among the northern population. But in the very far northeast, Kidal region, whose population is probably less than 100,000 people, so only a very small segment of Mali's total population, there the Tuareg, or the sections of the Tuareg who are involved with the armed groups, represent a much larger share of the population. But it would be quite hard to work out how to come up with some sort of political understanding for the future of that specific region if other regions where 95 or 98% of the country's population live are not being given comparable status.
Paul Melly, Associate Fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Ghana's President John Mahama reshuffled his cabinet on Wednesday. No reason was given for the move, but the president is under pressure to turn around the economy, and the national currency has been falling on international markets. From Accra, Isaac Kaledzi reports.
It is the first reshuffle by President John Mahama since he took office in January last year. He appointed a new Minister of Defense and dismissed the Interior and Agriculture Ministers. Mahama also merged some ministries that also saw the scrapping of the entire Information Ministry, which some say has become a propaganda tool for government. He retained key ministries of Foreign Affairs, Finance and Energy and Petroleum. Political strategist Dr. Kobe Mensah at the University of Ghana says this president is moving fast to restore confidence of his government as he makes plans for the next general elections.
The president is actually positioning himself into 2016. He's building a solid election machine to counter any other competition that is actually going to be on his way. The presidency has one sight in mind that, yes, how do I make people believe that, yes, I'm listening and I'm acting in order to achieve results. But then also, going forward in future 2016, how do I put up a very solid election machine, to show that, yes, we are the best people to manage this economy and manage it well.
President Mahama's government has been under pressure over the past months from ordinary Ghanaians about the state of the country's economy. But some ordinary people see this change of ministers as vital in changing the direction of the economy.
I think it's in good order, because if you currently look at what is happening on the economy, a lot of things are not working. And so if the president is bringing in new heads, new ideas, new people on board, experienced hands, I think that it's in order, because it is to help turn things around.
It's the same old stuff that they are just pushing around. They are not bringing in any new ideas. Because if really they want to make any impact on the economy or something, I believe there are people who are outside their party who can actually give input that will help the economy become better or something.
But Dr. Kobe Mensah thinks the president's decision to appoint new ministers and merge some others is a sign that he is listening to what Ghanaians are saying.
People have accused the president that you're listening, but you're not doing anything. And he keeps saying he's listening. Yes, people say, yes, we know you're listening, but you're not doing anything. So with this reshuffle, aligning some ministries, bringing in some personalities, could be argued that that's one of the moves, one of the things that I'm actually doing, to show that I'm listening, I'm acting, and possibly it's going to yield good results. So that's one crucial point.
Fuel prices have been increased by 20% this week after government removed subsidies on petroleum products. Many statutory payments have been defaulted, and the Ghanaian cedi continues to fall against the euro, dollar, and pound sterling. But in Parliament on Wednesday, the finance minister, who didn't suffer a sack, assured Ghanaians things will be done differently and progress will come soon.
The medium-term prospects of Ghana, we must restate, are bright. The last time I addressed this August House, I highlighted key measures to improve the situation. The measures are far-reaching and transformational in nature, and they are being implemented.
Ghanaians, however, await the coming months to find out if their president's reshuffle will transform current situations.
Isaac Kaledzi in Accra.
Behind the headlines.
UNAIDS, the main organisation coordinating the global response to the HIV/AIDS pandemic, has said that the number of people living with HIV worldwide has remained virtually unchanged over the last 2 years. But in a report issued ahead of next week's key AIDS conference in Melbourne, it warned that Africa remained the hardest hit continent, with almost 25 million people carrying the virus. That's 70% of the total. I asked Marie-Angela Simão, spokesperson for UNAIDS, whether there was any encouraging news for Africa in this latest report.
There are many encouraging news. We have that people who were tested and diagnosed for HIV, that 90% of them are on HIV treatment right now. The issue is getting those people who do not know their status right now, you know, who have never been tested, to get tested and get on treatment. We also have good news in the sense that the analysis shows also a decline in mortality. In most countries in sub-Saharan Africa, only Mozambique, there was an increase in AIDS-related deaths. All of the other ones we have seen, and some of them are marked a decrease. You know, the highest burden is South Africa, with the great push that the government has done on putting people on treatment. And recently, the government has announced that it's going to put 4.5 million people on treatment. The reduction was 48% AIDS-related deaths. That's related directly to better access to treatment.
So, in other words, access to antiretrovirals, the drugs which can improve the life of AIDS sufferers and prolong their lives, that is improving, but you're having trouble getting people, or rather persuading people, to get tested for the virus.
Yeah, that's
is the main obstacle here?
Sometimes people don't feel at risk. Partially people are afraid of stigma and discrimination if they are found as being HIV positive.
Condoms are a tried and tested means of preventing the spread of the virus, yet your report says that access to condoms remains a major problem in sub-Saharan Africa. What needs to be done to solve this problem?
First of all, we need to strengthen the government's procurement for condoms, because condoms have to be available free of charge. If people have to buy them, you know, it already adds a complexity to people using them, actually using them. And we have seen in recent years a major decline in not only government procurement, but also the use of international funding to procure condoms in these regions.
There is a key AIDS conference in Melbourne next week. Are any breakthroughs expected in the field of AIDS research?
No major breakthroughs. There are some cases of patients who were cured of HIV, but this is still a long time coming. There's a highlight on the Asia Pacific, which is quite good, and also the focus of the conference on people who are being left behind. So the focus on marginalized groups, groups that traditionally are either criminalized or have a lot of stigma and discrimination in society, like sex workers, transgender people, people who inject drugs, men who have sex with men. They have a big highlight on this conference.
Marie-Angela Simão, spokesperson for UNAIDS in Geneva. A German national has been abducted by unknown gunmen in northern Nigeria. Local media say armed men on motorcycles seized the man at gunpoint in front of his house in the town of Gombe in Adamawa State. Members of a local defence group set off in pursuit. Two of them were killed, the others returned with their bodies. The German was the principal at a local technical school which offers vocational training in a bid to try and bring down the rampant unemployment in the region. Mutanga Ahiwa works for Deutsche Welle's Hauser service and until recently was reporting from Adamawa State. He began by telling me about the training centres and the state's pro-German ex-governor.
All the projects he has in the state, especially the public projects which has to do with technical training centers, and they are manned or they are taken care of by the German experts who brought in the equipment and, of course, give the technical manpower or the skills training to the youth in the state. So those centers are 11 cut across the width of Adamawa State, one of which is situated in Gombe, where this particular unfortunate incident took place.
Who could be behind this kidnapping?
Looking at the political situation in the state at the moment, certainly it might not be unconnected with politics, though we all agree that Adamawa State is one of the states known to be volatile by Boko Haram attacks and so on. But at the moment, what is happening or the stories we hear from the people in the state certainly tells a lot about the political wranglings in the state at the moment, especially with the impeachment of the governor, who has a lot of projects and who has a lot of interest with German government and German expertise in everything he does. Certainly he do it with the German's expert. So all the project he has, his personal, you know, company, which are the Sebore farm, which produces a lot of products to both for import and exports, definitely will have a link to it, where people at the moment say it's more like a sabotage to everything he does, all the public establishments he did, especially the TTS, which is widely agreed and accepted by people in Adamawa State.
So in other words, you're saying he could have been a victim of local political intrigue?
Certainly, yes, because before now, while the governor was on seat, everywhere you see these experts going, they move along with heavy security personnel that take care of them, knowing how volatile is the place is. While he is not on seat, certainly there is going to be a lot of manipulations, knowing pretty well how situations are in Nigeria. And the other thing is that, quite surprising, things like kidnappings had never happened in Adamawa State. So this could be a first in history, a foreigner being kidnapped in Adamawa State.
What do these technical centers specialize in?
They are specialized in training different skills to young chaps, starting from carpentry, mechanical engineering, a lot of sorts of engineering.
How serious do you think the impact is going to be on relations between Germany and Nigeria?
This certainly would have a negative impact on, you know, the relationship, rapport between Nigeria and Germany, because nobody would ever be happy seeing his citizen abducted. Nobody knows what could happen to the person, and the reports we are almost getting, people or the vigilante that were trying to save the fellow German, two out of them were even killed. So it's not a good story. It's certainly going to have a negative impact on the relationship between both countries.
Wuntaga Ahiwa from Deutsche Welle's Hausa service.
Opinion.
And in Opinion this week, we'd like to hear what you think of the talks between Tuareg separatists and Malian government officials in Algiers. Do you believe they will be able to strike a peace deal that has so far proved to be elusive? Let us know your thoughts on the Malian peace talks in a text message to country code 49 160 957 595 10, or in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
Our main stories once again before we leave you. Peace talks between Malian government officials, Tuareg separatists and international negotiators were being launched in Algiers on Wednesday. Ghana's President John Mahama has reshuffled his cabinet, and a German national has been kidnapped in Adamawa State in northern Nigeria. Please remember, you can find more stories from Africa on our website, dw.de/Africa. If you missed part of this programme, you can listen to it again as audio on demand or download it as a podcast. And if you haven't yet entered our latest competition, you'll find details of that too on our website. There are valuable prizes to be won. Africa Link returns at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.